Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. In a major victory for community activists, San Diego County supervisors have voted down the controversial Cottonwood sand mine proposed along the Sweetwater River in Rancho San Diego. Find out how your supervisor voted on our show today. People who lost homes or suffered damages at the Cochise Fire in Lakeside earlier this month can get some help from the county, which has information on its Alert San Diego website. California leaders are speaking out after a Supreme Court ruling involving ICE stops in Los Angeles took away long-standing protections against racial profiling. The county grand jury is proposing consolidation of more independent fire protection districts into the county fire authority run by CAL FIRE. But two major districts in East County are taking stands against losing their independence. Destruction of mobile homes in the Cochise Fire in Lakeside points up the need to improve the fire redo. Points up the need to improve fire safety of mobile homes and manufactured housing. Find out steps that you can take to make a mobile home or manufactured home more resistant to wildfires on our show today. Protesters once again spoke out at the recent El Cajon City Council meeting over the city's resolution on cooperating with ICE. Momentum is building for a recall effort against Councilmember Phil Ortiz, and he may not be the only member whose seat is at risk, since a labor union organizer announced he will run for Mayor Bill Wells' seat. On Green Scene, hear about some events for La Mesa that include tree giveaways and information on how trees can help combat climate change. We'll also have a report from California News Service on abortion pill access in our state, and a report on how few community college students are going on to graduate from a four-year college in California. Then, from Public News Service, we'll have a few national news stories, including a Republican governor calling for calm after the shooting of a conservative activist, President Donald Trump's threat to send National Guard troops to Memphis, the administration's announced plans to end voter registration at new citizen swearing-in ceremonies, and more. We'll have information on the special election coming up over redistricting in California, and finally on People Power, hear about a benefit event coming up to help horses of Tiernanog recover from storm damage here in East County. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
In a victory for community activism, San Diego County supervisors have unanimously voted to reject the Cottonwood Sand Mine project. In a packed boardroom, the supervisors heard from over 100 speakers for more than 2 hours, including more than a dozen who called in to testify remotely. The vote marks the end of a long saga for East County residents, since sand mining along the Sweetwater River was first proposed 7 years ago. In July, the County Planning Commission voted to deny a major use permit and reclamation, so the project's applicant, Cottonwood Cajon ES LLC, appealed to the Board of Supervisors. The applicant sought to convert part of Cottonwood Golf Club in Rancho San Diego along the Sweetwater River into a 10-year sand mining operation, followed by a 2-year reclamation period. Once word got out that the plan would involve sand excavation and processing on 214 acres from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday for 10 years, concerned residents formed an organization called Stop Cottonwood Sand Mine. East County tribal nations, environmental groups, the San Miguel Fire District, and other organizations joined the effort. Thousands signed petitions opposing the open mine, citing fire safety and evacuation issues, health concerns, traffic impact, noise, air quality, biological resources, greenhouse gas emissions, and impacts on tribal cultural resources. During the hearing, supervisors spoke out on their stances. District 4 Supervisor Monica Montgomery Stepp, who represents neighborhoods in the area, expressed concern over the intensity of activity at the site. "We always have to weigh the benefits of a project and put that up against the harm that a project could do. Montgomery Stepp said. Supervisor Joel Anderson, whose district also includes areas near the proposed sand mining site, said he had listened to all perspectives before casting his vote against the project. Supervisor Jim Desmond has been a vocal advocate of many developments throughout the years. He acknowledged that he struggled with this one, but ultimately concluded, "It's just not a good fit." He added, "I'm sensitive to the issues raised by Sikwan. We must work well with our tribal nations within the region." Tribal elder and Sikwan councilman Jamie LeBrake told supervisors that the proposal would be devastating to the Kumeyaay people, our culture, heritage, archaeology, and our ancestral human remains. Public comment on the agenda item began with a presentation by the project applicant urging the board to grant the appeal and approve the sand mine. Project attorney Jennifer Lynch said at project completion, the county gains 148 acres of protected, pristine open space. There will be no air quality, dust, noise, water quality, or traffic impact. Some in the audience vocally disagreed with Lynch through booing, grumbling, and jeering, prompting board chairwoman Tara Lawson-Reamer to warn the crowd against outbursts. Local Carpenters Union representatives and other members of the building industry spoke in favor of the project and were met with similar opposition. Dr. Mark Laska, founder and president of Great Ecology, a locally based ecological consulting group, said his company had done a detailed evaluation on the site, adding, "We've worked on 500,000 acres in over 25 years of business. This is the perfect site for ecological and habitat restoration. Post-project, the project will look phenomenal." Former supervisor Diane Jacob stated, "I've been part of many land use hearings in my decades of experience, and I can tell you I have never seen such a destructive project with such negative impacts on the people who live in the community." Stop Cottonwood President Elizabeth Urquhart urged supervisors to join thousands of residents, the Sikwan Band of Kumeyaay Nation, Sierra Club, three community planning groups, community organizations, the San Miguel Fire Protection District, county planning staff, and planning commission in denying the appeal and denying this project, she told supervisors. Mary Jantz, co-founder of Stop Cottonwood, testified, "Rest assured, the devastating effects of an open-pit industrial mine operation will reach far beyond a quarter mile, with no guarantee the project lasts only 10 years. Leonard Villarreal, a resident of Hamul for almost 30 years, said the project would not be like a golf ball hitting the street. If the sand mine is approved, it would be like an asteroid hitting our community, he said. In my view, approval would be the Tijuana sewage crisis 2.0. Kathleen Hedberg, representing the Grossmont Mount Helix Improvement Association, said, "This project conflicts with the general plan, community plan, and the Rancho San Diego specific plan." Hedberg, who was on the Helix Water District Board, brought up the serious polluted water and challenges facing San Diego and Tijuana. "Think about this Tijuana sewage crisis at the border," Hedberg said. "We do not need to have our own environmental hazard in our community." On his Facebook page after the vote, Jantz posted these wry comments. "I just want to say thank you to those who told me over the last 7 years that we couldn't win against a Beverly Hills billionaire with great connections, that the Board of Supervisors were in the bag in support of this project, that a relatively ragtag group of community advocates couldn't overcome a well-oiled and well-funded machine. Thank you. You inspired me and all of us at StopCottonwoodSandMine.org to work hard for our community." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is John Tidwell.
Our East County Magazine radio show needs volunteers, and so does our award-winning news website at eastcountymagazine.org. If you would like to help write scripts, learn reporting skills, research topics for our news team, or have an on-air voice to be the media, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617.
San Diego County has created an online guide to help those people who lost their homes or sustained damages in the Cochise Fire in Lakeside. Resources include info for homeowners seeking property tax relief, permits for repairs or rebuilding, along with self-sufficiency resources. Details are listed on the county's Alert San Diego website at alertsandiego.org, including contact info for various agencies. Some of the services provided by the county include the assessor has disaster relief claim forms for homes or businesses with property damages of $10,000 or more. Their office can also assist with vital record replacement. Planning and Development Services helps with temporary occupancy permits and info related to repairs and rebuilding. Health and Human Services offers information about assistance for food, medical services, housing, and more. And the Environmental Health and Quality Department assists with permits for repairs on damaged mobile home parks and water systems. Additionally, information for community-based organizations such as the American Red Cross, Salvation Army, and Team Rubicon is also included. The County Office of Emergency Services provides regional recovery resources after an emergency or disaster. Before an emergency, you should register your cell phone for Alert San Diego emergency alerts, create a personal disaster plan, an evacuation go kit, and a shelter-in-place kit. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Former San Diego City Attorney Maura Elliott is running for the California State Senate District 40 seat, which is currently held by Republican Senate Minority Leader Brian Jones, who will be leaving office due to term limits. The district encompasses much of East County. It includes Santee, Ramona, Poway, Alpine, Pine Valley, Escondido, Valley Center, Palma Valley, Fallbrook, and northeast parts of San Diego. The Scripps Ranch resident served two terms as San Diego's elected city attorney and was the first woman and Latina to hold the office. Her campaign website states she has been, quote, a national leader in gun violence prevention, consumer advocacy, and support for victims of domestic violence, sex trafficking, and elder abuse. She relaunched Your Safe Place, the nation's first one-stop shop for victims of domestic violence, and expanded vital services to survivors of sex trafficking, also partnering with the legislature and local elected leaders to secure shelter for victims and their families. According to her website, Maura Elliott also created the office's first affirmative civil enforcement unit to protect consumers, workers, and the environment. Her lawsuit against Big Pharma to hold manufacturers and distributors accountable for opioid addiction brought tens of millions of dollars to the region. She also created a dedicated conservatorship unit, the first of its kind to effectively and compassionately address the needs of unhoused individuals with complex mental health issues. Elliott, who ran as a Democrat in the nonpartisan city attorney's office, will face off against Democrat Suzanne Till, who grew up in Lakeside and serves on the Padre Dam Water Board, as well as two Republicans who have expressed their intent to run for the office, San Marcos City Council member Edward Musgrove and former Assembly candidate Christy Bruce Lane. The California primary election will be in June 2026, with the top two vote-getters advancing to the general election in November 2026. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Marie Johnson.
Leaders across California are speaking out against the Supreme Court's decision Monday to allow federal immigration agents to racially profile Californians suspected of being undocumented, at least for now. The High Court vacated a temporary restraining order, which means the sweeping ICE raids can continue while the case is decided. Ernest Herrera with the Mexican American Legal Defense Fund says the decision means that ICE agents can also question someone based on the language they speak or their presumed occupation.
Justice Kavanaugh sacrifices the rights of all Latinos to the false Trumpist idol of unconstrained immigration enforcement. This Trump administration are going to be allowed to do an ethnic cleansing of this country and go after the people they see as enemies, which are Latinos.
The Department of Homeland Security called the decision a win for the safety of Californians and the rule of law. ICE has conducted major raids in Southern California, targeting day laborers and farm workers. American citizens and legal residents have been violently detained by agents in civilian clothes, wearing face masks, driving unmarked cars. Jeff Freitas is president of the CFT, a union of educators and classified professionals. He says this decision draws our nation further into authoritarianism. Herrera calls the indiscriminate immigration stops unconstitutional.
The most basic principles of our government under the Fourth Amendment, to be free of unreasonable search and seizure, that's being thrown out the window.
L.A. Mayor Karen Bass said this decision will lead to more working families being torn apart. Governor Gavin Newsom added, this isn't about enforcing immigration laws. It's about targeting Latinos to deliberately harm California's families and small businesses. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
The San Miguel Fire Protection District is taking the lead in challenging a San Diego County civil grand jury report released earlier this year that recommends consolidation of fire protection districts around San Diego County. The grand jury report recommends that willing districts become part of the San Diego County Fire Protection District with the goal of improving fire protection services. San Miguel Fire Chief Andy Lawler is pushing back against a narrative that recommends standalone fire districts like his become part of the county fire department, which is run by Cal Fire, a state agency. Alpine Fire also aims to stay independent, while some other districts have already relinquished local control, in most cases voluntarily, though one community fought consolidation in court. In unincorporated areas of the county, some firefighters and command staff are Cal Fire employees, but they operate under the direction of the County Fire Authority, which oversees the county fire departments. Other districts are notable standalones that remain independent, including San Miguel, the Alpine Fire Protection District, Lakeside Fire Protection District, and several more. Some formerly independent districts have already been consolidated under the County Fire and Cal Fire umbrella. Borrego Springs joined the county system in 2023 at the request of the Borrego Fire District. In some rural areas where there aren't enough volunteer firefighters to man stations on many days, the service likely improved. But residents in Julian, by contrast, balked at the county taking over its volunteer fire department, sparking a lawsuit in which the county prevailed, so the volunteer district was dissolved. That district had voted for the consolidation, but many of the people in Julian and the firefighters themselves opposed that action. After consolidation, some residents complained of safety issues such as a Cal Fire engine stuck in snow due to lacking a snowplow, as well as reports of brush rigs being first to respond to some fires instead of a large rig, which may have resulted in structures lost. There have also been anecdotal complaints of some fire stations in remote areas, such as Ranchita, occasionally left unattended. East County Magazine has asked for staffing records for select stations, but we've not yet received those records. The grand jury report notes that Borrego Springs and Ramona Fire Department cited financial considerations in their decisions to join the county fire department. These districts benefited by receiving new personnel and equipment, as well as commitments to improve facilities, according to the grand jury's report. The San Miguel District has a major stake in the region because it's the largest independent district in our county, covering 47 square miles, including Casa de Oro, Spring Valley, Grossmont, Mount Helix, Rancho San Diego, Dehesa, Crest, Bastonia, and some unincorporated parts of El Cajon and La Mesa. San Miguel also has a unique history with consolidation. While facing serious budget cuts and a decline in property tax revenues a few years ago, San Miguel Fire's Board of Directors in 2012 entered into a 5.5-year contract with Cal Fire for fire protection needs. But the board terminated that deal in 2016 and took back its standalone status in 2017 after consolidation opponents won election to the board. Those favoring returning to independent status indicated that firefighters were asked to work longer hours, leading to fatigue. Chief Lawler says San Miguel is sensitive on this issue because of what the district went through. As long as his board agrees, he says, I'm not going to sit on my heels. He complained of bureaucratic red tape when the district was under Cal Fire operations. He also objects to the blurring of jurisdictions, given that the county fire department's personnel all wear Cal Fire state patches on their uniforms. Chief Lawler says, I think that's a problem. They're saying they're county, but they are the state of California. The grand jury report notes how in recent years, fire risk has intensified. In 2024, Cal Fire reports the county responded to 32 fires with more than 10 acres of destruction each. Most of those occurred in unincorporated areas. The risk is even greater, the grand jury reports, because development along that urban wildland interface has expanded continuously, with county estimates suggesting the potential for 60,000 additional residential units. Industrial expansion is also underway in unincorporated areas, including at least 10 projects under review for construction of additional battery energy storage systems, which have been linked to increased fire risks. The grand jury's findings include giving rise in costs of personnel, construction, and equipment. Fire protection districts in unincorporated areas should expect to require increased resources to effectively prevent and respond to fires. The grand jury, relying on CAL FIRE data, also found that consolidation has improved response times, upgraded equipment, and augmented staff. In addition to advising consolidation with any willing districts, the grand jury recommends that the county lead an effort with current fire departments to standardize defensible space requirements and controlled burn permitting, as well as increase cooperation to help make structures more resistant to flames, provide home inspections, and enhance access to fire insurance. Lawler says while San Miguel appreciates the grand jury's intent to improve wildfire resilience and the provision of services, his district disagrees on several items. Lawler did not mince words in his official response to the grand jury report, published in May. He states, the grand jury's report raises important concerns about wildfire preparedness, but its call for accelerated consolidation under the San Diego County Fire Protection District overlooks the proven value of local governance and the broad range of emergency services provided by independent fire agencies. He notes that San Miguel Fire Protection District operates with legal authority, strong community trust, and an established record of operational effectiveness. While regional coordination is essential, this can and does occur through mutual aid, shared training, and formal agreements now, he says, without sacrificing local control. And, he adds, a one-size-fits-all approach risks eroding tailored fire prevention efforts and community engagement while creating potential disruptions to other emergency services currently provided by fire protection districts. While San Miguel previously outsourced its firefighting to CAL FIRE and was able to take that back, those districts that choose to dissolve lose that option. And once they're gone for good. San Miguel emphasizes collaboration over consolidation and proven local leadership over mandates. Lawler points out that local governance is constitutionally and statutorily protected, and that local fire protection district boards, with elected local boards, are tailored to the unique geographic, ecological, and cultural needs of the jurisdictions. Lawler says San Miguel responds to about 15,000 calls for service a year and provides rescue, emergency medical, and hazardous material responses, too. It also offers weed abatement that ensures the clearing of hazardous vegetation through a dedicated contractor, a service that the county lacks. San Miguel has demonstrated operational excellence and fiscal responsibility independently and was recognized with a 2025 National Award granted by the Government Finances Officers Association. Alpine Fire Protection District Chief Brian Boglin similarly says his district agrees about the need for consistency in defensible space requirements and supporting community in wildfire preparedness, and he works with the county and other neighboring agencies. But Chief Boglin expresses concerns about maintaining independence and accountability that the district has had since it formed way back in 1957. Chief Boglin says, "We are directly accountable to our community, both fiscally and operationally, and we believe that model continues to serve Alpine well. While we support regional collaboration, we do not believe consolidation is in the best interests of Alpine residents." He says there's concern that if Alpine were to be absorbed by the County Fire Protection District, the community could lose the direct representation and local governance that it has today. Its elected board of directors, all Alpine residents, know the unique needs of this community and respond directly to them, he says. So, on July 15th, the Alpine Fire District Board voted unanimously to affirm that the district is not interested in pursuing consolidation. In late July, San Diego County supervisors acknowledged the report and had the County Chief Administrative Officer, Ebony Shelton, share public responses to those findings. The county leaders several times said that while they agreed with some of the findings, they do not feel that they can respond for other agencies. As for the grand jury recommendations, the county's response states that two of them, consolidation of willing fire protection districts and efforts to standardize defensible space requirements and controlled burn permitting, need further analysis, and the county cannot respond on behalf of those other fire agencies. The county response says that consolidation could be explored if an independent fire protection district takes action by filing an application for dissolution with the Local Agency Formation Commission, or LAFCO. The county indicates it will explore standardizing fire code differences with the fire marshals in the future, but it will be up to each district to take action. The San Diego County Civil Grand Jury's findings and recommendations do not mean that any change is imminent, however. James Tuck, the 2024-25 grand jury foreman, says this was not the first time, nor will it be the last, that the grand jury looks into fire matters. He says of this report, "I think if nothing else, it really raises the importance of having fire preparedness and prevention forefront on our minds and really start to think about our unincorporated areas that are becoming more and more developed. There's more people living there, and more of us are going to be at risk for fire hazards just by virtue of us being in the backcountry." Tony Meacham, San Diego County Fire Chief and CAL FIRE Unit Chief, says he believes that in every community County Fire has gone into, it has improved the region's fire protection. He says, "We've been more cost-effective, more efficient," but he adds, "I have to respect that these are independent government agencies elected by the voters." He says he won't be calling the agencies to solicit them to consolidate, but he adds, "We would love to sit down and talk to people about opportunities, but they have to call my phone." The property tax allocation for fire protection districts is another issue. The 12 districts under county jurisdiction in the unincorporated areas have varying resources. Property taxes are the main revenue source for most fire protection districts. The 8 districts formed before voters passed Prop 13 in 1978 get a much larger share of property tax revenues, as high as 12% or more, than those formed after 1978, which typically get about 2%. San Miguel Fire District's average annual tax increment allocations are over 14%, and County Fire is 6%. Also, by comparison, Alpine is 10.3% and Lakeside is almost 17%. Anna Brown, legislative coordinator for County Supervisor Joel Anderson, says Prop 13 and other legislation locked in high rates for those districts formed before. But, she adds, agencies that were formed after Prop 13 were left with negotiating a new base percentage with the county, and they only received about 2%. All fire protection districts seek additional revenues through grants, service fees, special taxes, and donations, but collectively, these form a relatively small percentage of funding. The grand jury report finds that as equipment, construction, and personnel costs increase, some districts are struggling to retain staff, upgrade facilities or equipment, and meet the increasing demand for service. But the report notes that in October 2024, county supervisors did agree to increase the property tax allocations for Deer Springs and Valley Center fire protection districts from 2.1% up to 6% each. But there are continued disparities in fire protection resources across our unincorporated areas of San Diego County. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for San Diego's inland region. Now, stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Swift action by firefighters, including aerial attacks, held the Cochise Fire in Lakeside to 5.3 acres, but the damage from the September 9th brush fire was substantial. 5 homes were destroyed, including 3 mobile homes at the Monterey Mobile Lodge, according to Lakeside's Fire Marshal Jeremy Davis. 3 other homes in the mobile home park were damaged. CAL FIRE Captain Mike Cornett says that 10 to 15 vehicles were burned. There were also 2 reported civilian injuries, a burn victim and another with smoke inhalation. The first engine arrived within a couple of minutes after the fire was reported on the Highway 80 business loop east of Los Cochise Road. Other crews soon arrived, with 15 more engines later rolling in. Local helicopters dropped water and fixed-wing aircraft also responded to the fire, though dropping fire retardant was impeded by firefighters on the ground and people evacuating in the crowded space. 17,300 residents were under evacuation orders, according to Supervisor Joel Anderson. The fire accelerated quickly, in part due to propane tanks exploding and vehicle fuel tanks bursting into flames. The losses highlight the need to improve safety of mobile homes from wildfires, since even the swiftest possible firefighting response to the Cochise Fire could not prevent loss of homes and very nearly human life. Resident Sharon Edwards has been lauded as an angel for rescuing her neighbor, 90-year-old Evelyn Buell, who is blind and cannot walk. Buell told Times of San Diego, "I didn't smell anything until my neighbor came banging on my house and got me out of there." Edwards' own mobile home was gutted by the fire, while Buell's home was damaged. For Buell, the fire brought back disturbing memories, since she lost the home she shared with her daughter and son-in-law during the 2003 Cedar Fire. Renee Evans lived next door to a mobile home that burned down. She says her neighbor's cats perished, and he also lost his vehicle, making his loss even more devastating. Evans had some damage to her home and was displaced overnight. She says, "We had a lot of air support and fire engines here," but adds that the wind was blowing embers onto roofs ahead of the fire. Evans has exterior as well as interior sprinklers and has taken care to eliminate weeds on her property, steps that may have helped save her home. Mobile homes can burn quickly and are often located close to other mobile homes, enabling fire to spread quickly. Several years ago, the March fire in Alpine devastated a mobile home park, burning dozens of structures. These fires highlight the danger that wildfires pose to mobile home park residents. But there are steps you can take to harden your home and make it more wildfire resistant. San Diego offers grants and loans for mobile home owners and manufactured homeowners to make home health and safety repairs, including fire safety upgrades, Supervisor Anderson advises. To qualify, mobile home owners must live in unincorporated areas of San Diego County or in certain cities, including Lemon Grove and Poway in the inland region. The homeowner must have lived there for at least 1 year before the application is approved and have a household income at or below 80% of San Diego County's area median income. For example, for a household with just one person, you can earn up to $92,700. For two people, the limit is $105,950, and the limit rises with more people in the family. The home repair grant provides up to $20,000 that does not have to be paid back. The home repair loan program allows owners to borrow up to $25,000 at 3% annual interest. No monthly payment is required, but the loan must be repaid after 30 years or sooner if the home sells, is transferred, or the owner moves out. For more information to add your name to the program waitlist, you can call 858-694-4847. There are many steps you can take to reduce the wildfire risk to a mobile home or manufactured home. Key steps include: create defensible space around your home with nothing combustible within 5 feet around the mobile home. If there's room between your mobile home and others, clear 30 feet around your residence of dead grasses, weeds, and other combustible foliage. Create space between plants and trim limbs to avoid ladder fuel for fires. Don't use any bark mulch or gorilla hair mulch, which are highly flammable. Keep the roof clear of leaves or debris. Harden your home to protect from wind-blown embers, the most common cause of wildfires igniting homes. Don't have any combustible materials under decks or beneath the mobile home. Decks should have corrosion-resistant metal screening with 1/8 inch mesh from the edge of the deck to the ground. Don't have a fence that can burn, such as wood or vinyl, within 5 feet of your residence. Choose a metal fence, such as chain link. Replace flammable siding, such as vinyl, that melts with safer alternatives. Many fiber cement siding products carry a Class A flame spread index, the safest level possible, and can slow the spread of a fire. Steel siding is also a good choice. Avoid aluminum siding, which can melt at less than half the temperature needed to melt steel. Brick and stone veneers over wooden frames can reduce the risk of fire damage substantially, but avoid thin veneers. If you can afford it, install fiber cement trim around windows and doors and be sure all openings are well sealed. If many costly upgrades are needed, consider replacing the old fire-prone home with a new fire-resistant manufactured home. If you live in a high fire hazard severity zone, all new manufactured homes must conform to Title 24, Part 2, Chapter 7A to qualify for building permits. Exterior sprinklers may help, but are less important than making the mobile home itself fire-hardened, such as with non-flammable siding and decking. Check with your fire department first to see if there's adequate water supply for an extended period. Some exterior sprinklers can be activated manually or by an automated device using a sensor or cell phone, but sensors may not pick up wind-driven embers, since they rely on detection of heat and flames. Water spray landing on a hot window may cause glass to break and allow fire to enter. Water may not protect undersides of mobile homes. As for interior sprinklers, while these can douse a fire that starts inside your home, interior sprinklers will not stop a wildfire that burns a mobile home from the outside inward. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
Protesters showed up at the El Cajon City Council meeting on September 9th to continue voicing opposition to the city's resolution allowing closer cooperation with Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE. They also reminded Councilmember Phil Ortiz that their efforts to have him recalled from office are ramping up. Their appearance came a day after the U.S. Supreme Court overturned a district court judge's temporary restraining order in Los Angeles, which had barred federal agents from stopping people without reasonable suspicion. The Supreme Court ruling now allows agents to stop and detain people based on ethnicity, spoken language, type of work they do, or their location, an action that critics call racial profiling legalized. 12 speakers, some wearing T-shirts with messaging and holding signs, took turns calling out against the resolution, while some directed their comments to individual council members. Connie Elder thanked Ortiz for inviting some of the protest leaders to his office for a chat after the last contentious council meeting. She says they showed up in good faith and hoped that Ortiz might be open to discussion. But, Elder says, turns out he wasn't interested in discussion. He wasn't interested in listening. What she calls Ortiz's arrogance has invigorated efforts instead to collect signatures for his recall, says Elder, who then told Ortiz, "You, sir, I believe, are history." Leslie Thompson is an El Cajon resident and substitute teacher in the Cajon Valley Union School District. She told the council that she does not like the policy of cooperating with ICE because ICE is not adhering to its stated mission, which is to seek criminals who are undocumented. Instead, she told the council, "They are just going around and picking on anybody, doing racial profiling and conducting a campaign of terror. Children are afraid to go to school, their parents are afraid to bring them to school, and their parents are afraid to do other things in the community, such as shopping and going to work." The teacher continued, "As a substitute teacher, this is concerning for me because I don't want children to feel unsafe," adding that she's also worried about ICE coming to school to take away parents. "These are my students that I serve, and they are also my neighbors," she said. "I would really like the city to only cooperate with ICE if they are actually looking for criminals, people who are sought for violent crimes." Mayor Bill Wells responded to Thompson, stating, "There is a law in California called SB 54 which doesn't allow the city to cooperate with ICE, even though we think we should, so thank you." Thompson fired back, "That's not my understanding." Wells said, "Your understanding is really irrelevant because that's the law. In fact, the city's resolution does go beyond what state law allows, calling for police to cooperate with ICE in arresting people who are merely suspected of crimes, whereas state law allows cooperation only for people convicted of certain serious crimes." Chris Ford is an El Cajon resident participating in efforts to recall Ortiz. He listed reasons ICE has used to deport those he referred to as innocent people. According to Ford, those include being brown, being black, being white but from dangerous countries like Germany, Canada, Australia, working in a restaurant, working on a farm, generally working jobs Americans like me aren't going to do, being an American citizen but not having your birth certificate on hand, being an Afghani translator for the Army, being a student, and sometimes, maybe when they don't target the most vulnerable members of society, they will detain an actual violent criminal, said Ford. He concluded by calling for the recall of Ortiz and withdrawal of ICE from our region and state. Carlos Perez, a 40-year resident of El Cajon, wore a red shirt that said, "Recall Ortiz." He asked Ortiz if his parents arrived in the U.S. legally or illegally. Ortiz did not respond. Then Perez asked, "Phil Ortiz, as a pastor at Foothills Christian Church, did you know that Jesus was an immigrant? What happened to love thy neighbor?" Lifelong El Cajon resident Alexander Kraft then announced that he will run for mayor. He told Mayor Wells, "Since you have chosen to ignore your responsibilities as mayor to the people of El Cajon, I'll be taking over your job in 2026, said Kraft, a union organizer who wants to represent needs of working people, according to his Instagram account. "You have made it very clear that you're more interested in a position in Congress or the County Board of Supervisors," he continued, "so I'll be running for mayor of El Cajon, and I'll win, and I'll free you up to pursue another job." Kraft challenged Wells to a debate. Wells responded that they could talk about it closer to the election. Two speakers asked Councilmember Steve Goble to sponsor a new resolution to reverse the previous one. Councilmember Gary Kendrick reminded the audience that he and Councilmember Michelle Mitchell voted against that controversial resolution, and both have received threats for taking a stand to protect immigrants in the El Cajon community. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Marie Johnson with the Green Scene Report. La Mesa is hoping more trees will sprout up after it hosts a four-event education series from September through November. As part of the series, thanks to a partnership with Tree San Diego, 100 free trees will be distributed to La Mesa residents. The series is focused on bringing cleaner air, more wildlife habitat spaces, and shade while reducing pollution and waterways through planting trees. The events are part of La Mesa's ongoing commitment to sustainability with its Climate Action Plan and Strategic Plan goals. Trees are vital assets to a community. They improve the visual appeal of a neighborhood, increase property values, reduce home cooling costs, remove air pollutants, and provide wildlife habitat. Similarly, healthy green infrastructure systems can mitigate the urban heat island effect, lower building energy use, provide natural stormwater management, and improve local air quality. The events, three in-person and one virtual, are aimed at creating a healthier, cleaner, and more beautiful community, and will highlight the many benefits of trees, including how they improve air quality, promote public health, and save energy. The events will offer guidance on how to plant and maintain trees. The events run from September 27th through November 8th in local parks, as well as one online program. You can register for these events at treesandiego.org. La Mesa residents who attend events on September 27th or October 11th will also be entered in an opportunity drawing for a free 5-gallon fruit tree. Tree San Diego is a nonprofit dedicated to enhancing the quality, density, and sustainability of the region's urban forests for the benefits of all communities and the environment. Here are a few more fun facts about the benefits of trees. They allow for cleaner air. 100 trees remove 53 tons of carbon dioxide and 430 pounds of other air pollutants each year. Trees combat climate change. By reducing energy demand and absorbing carbon dioxide, trees and vegetation decrease air pollution and greenhouse gas emissions. 100 mature trees can capture and store about 139,000 gallons of rainwater per year. They also promote cleaner water. A medium-sized tree intercepts up to 2,300 gallons of stormwater runoff per year. In addition, trees improve public health. People are less likely to be hospitalized for asthma when they live in neighborhoods with many trees, and they are less apt to suffer depression, stress, or anxiety. Strategically placed shade trees can help save up to 56% in annual air conditioning costs for homes and businesses. Trees also reduce urban heat island effect. Shaded surfaces may be 20 to 45 degrees cooler than unshaded areas.
Our East County Magazine radio show needs volunteers, and so does our award-winning news website at eastcountymagazine.org. If you would like to help write scripts, learn reporting skills, research topics for our news team, or have an on-air voice to be the media, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617.
The abortion medication mifepristone turns 25 this month, but it is under fire in the courts and in multiple red state legislatures. The Food and Drug Administration recently announced a review of the medication. Last year, the U.S. Supreme Court dismissed a lawsuit that would have revoked FDA approval and made the drug illegal nationwide. Now the states of Florida and Texas are trying to revive that plan. UC San Francisco professor Ushma Upadhyay, an expert on telehealth abortion, says there's no merit to the suit.
The science is clear. Mifepristone is safe and effective. Mifepristone was first approved by the FDA 25 years ago. Its safety record has been demonstrated through real-world use and in over 100 research publications.
Anti-abortion groups often oppose its use on religious grounds. Texas now allows people to sue anyone who distributes abortion medication or sends it by mail into the state. But the state of California is among those stockpiling mifepristone and offers resources at abortion.ca.gov. The state passed a shield law in 2023 to protect providers from out-of-state prosecutions. Jennifer Driver is Senior Director of Reproductive Rights with the State Innovation Exchange.
Anti-abortion lawmakers in at least 14 states are escalating their attacks by introducing bills that would criminalize the purchase, prescription, and distribution of medication abortion. And let's be very clear, they are trying to turn doctors into criminals and patients into targets.
Data show that as of last year, one in four abortions was provided through telehealth, compared to 5% before the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade in 2022. After that decision, dozens of states passed full or partial abortion bans. Since then, abortion rates have remained steady nationwide. Providers in states with shield laws wrote prescriptions for more than 120,000 medication abortions in 2024. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
We're on the road in East County, visiting some amazing towns and meeting some incredible people across our region. Welcome to another adventure on East County Magazine's On the Road.
This is Hayden Parsley, on the road in Hucumba Hot Springs for East County Magazine. You can take a trip into California's past at the Desert View Tower, a quirky and whimsical relic of the past that is still open to the public here in San Diego's East County. Located just off Interstate 8 at the Incapa exit, the tower is poised on a rocky overlook surrounded by desert on all sides. Built in the 1920s by Bert Vaughn, a real estate tycoon who owned much of Hucumba, this 70-foot watchtower has become a tourist attraction and a local landmark on the outskirts of the small town known as Hucumba Hot Springs. Originally built to commemorate the area's rough pre-highway history, the tower houses a small museum filled with artifacts and oddities of California's history, including our region's Native American, Spanish, and pioneer past. The top floor of the tower is an observation deck, with a coin-fed telescope that provides a breathtaking view of Imperial Valley and the Anza-Borrego Desert, though now somewhat marred by a wind farm. In 1950, a gift shop was added around the base of the tower. The shop still operates today and is filled with an eclectic mix of items such as geodes, gems and minerals, vintage postcards, historic and travel books on our region, arts and crafts items such as handmade Tecate tiles, onyx bookends, musical instruments, carved animal sculptures, and more. Roaming this area of the tower are the owner's many friendly dogs that add to the rustic charm of the location. You can also get a workout pumping a player piano while listening to old-time tunes. While I was there, the wind was gusting. It was a bit chilly and I wished I had a better coat when I reached the top. The owner says this is atypical though, and that it is warm and sunny most days. The proprietor, Ben Schultz, has many colorful stories on East County's history, culture, and colorful characters, having operated the site for many years. Boulder Park at the Desert View Tower was created in 1933 by an unemployed engineer, Merle Ratcliffe, who was out of work during the Great Depression. He sculpted reptiles and fanciful animals out of the huge stone boulders. I didn't get a chance to tour these, which will be an adventure for another time.
Students who go to a community college right out of high school graduate with a four-year degree just 16% of the time within 8 years of starting classes, according to a new analysis from the Public Policy Institute of California. The data show that students who start out in the UC or CSU system fare much better, with a completion rate of 72%. PPIC researcher Hans Johnson says income level and college readiness are big factors.
In general, what we found was that high school districts that serve more high-income families and those that have a relatively high share of Asian students have higher college-going and college completion rates.
The data comes from a new state online dashboard established this spring called the Cradle to Career Dataset, which tracks students over time. Higher ed has been working to improve transfer rates for years. For example, the Cal State system has begun offering dual admission, where students are admitted with a requirement that they first complete 2 years at a community college. And California waives tuition for the first 2 years of community college for recent high school graduates. Still, Marcelo Cabral, an academic counselor at El Camino College in Torrance, says higher ed will need a lot more funding so students can afford to attend full-time and colleges can provide proper guidance.
80% of students who are attending a community college need to have financial aid. 80% of the students have never done any career exploration, so we need a lot more financial aid and counselors, both academic and career counselors.
Cabral notes that college readiness remains a problem since many California high school students still graduate with only basic reading and math skills and then struggle to complete college-level courses. Support for this reporting was provided by Lumina Foundation. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Every one of us has to look in the mirror and decide, are we going to try to make it better or are we going to make it worse? I pray that God will help us find him again and find our souls and find each other again.
Utah Republican Governor Spencer Cox went on the major television networks to urge for calm and peace in the wake of the assassination of right-wing organizer Charlie Kirk. Cox says President Trump told him to call for nonviolence, although Trump himself is labeling Democrats and the left as, quote, vicious and horrible. Others on the right are calling for retribution against liberals they call, quote, demonic. Trump is threatening to send the National Guard to Memphis, even as crime there is at a 25-year low. Tennessee's Republican governor says he supports the plan. Pastor Earl Fisher of the Memphis Abyssinian Baptist Church calls it political theater that would do nothing for public safety.
I'm not ruling out that they're not going to try to deploy them to the blackest parts of town, because this is about a show of force. I don't think it's fundamentally about lowering crime, because the facts show that crime is already trending downward.
Fisher questions why troops aren't headed to Utah following the political violence there. Immigration officials have banned non-governmental groups from registering new citizens to vote at their naturalization ceremonies. That's been done for decades, but they say it's too difficult to ensure it's nonpartisan. Celia Canavan with the League of Women Voters of Massachusetts calls the new policy the latest attack on the rights of immigrant communities.
To have that right suppressed from the minute they become a new citizen, it's terrifying. It's a real, real dark day in democracy.
The League registered more than 50,000 new citizens at ceremonies last year. Anti-death penalty advocates are raising concerns about a new Idaho firing squad law. Officials say they plan to build an automated firing squad that doesn't involve humans. Robin Marr with the Death Penalty Information Center says the need to make a machine do the killing shows how immoral it is.
The idea that executions are legal and morally correct really can't be reconciled with efforts to remove responsibility from the people who conduct executions.
U.S. executions have been declining for decades, with Texas, Florida, and South Carolina now performing 6 and 10. Last year, South Carolina carried out two executions by firing squad for the first time since 2010, and in one case, an executioner missed. Four states use firing squads, but Idaho will become the first state where it is the main form of capital punishment. European Union leaders slammed Russia for its second breach of NATO airspace in under a week by drones, this time in Romania. Trump again threatened increased sanctions. Federal Reserve Governor Lisa Cook is asking a court to reject efforts to fire her, just as newly released mortgage records show she listed a second home as a vacation house, not a primary residence. The central bank is set to vote on interest rates this week. I'm Simone Perez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Our East County Magazine radio show needs volunteers, and so does our award-winning news website at eastcountymagazine.org. If you would like to help write scripts, learn reporting skills, research topics for our news team, or have an on-air voice to be the media, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617.
This is Miriam Raftery with a public service announcement from the San Diego County Registrar of Voters. The registrar has mailed over 2 million postcards to the county's registered voters, listing their voting options for the November 4th special election. Every active registered voter will receive a ballot in the mail and will have three options for returning their ballot: by mail to one of the registrar's official ballot drop boxes or at any vote center. Voters can expect to receive their ballot the week of October 6th, giving them nearly a month to mark their ballot and return it by the final day of voting on November 4th. Voters throughout the state will decide whether to adopt Proposition 50, an amendment to the state constitution related to redistricting. The measure would allow mid-census redistricting of congressional districts in California and is proposed by Democrats to counter mid-census redistricting in Texas and other states where gerrymandering aims to pick up Republican seats. The measure would replace California's Independent Redistricting Commission in congressional races, but only for 5 years. Voters who reside in the city of Poway's Council District 2 will have an additional question on their ballot. Poway District 2 voters will decide whether to remove their elected representative on the city council from office. Early voting begins Monday, October 6th at the Registrar of Voters office in Kearny Mesa. However, the registrar encourages voters to take advantage of the convenience of voting by mail. You can vote at home and return your voted ballot through the mail, no postage needed, or drop it off at any of the registrar's official ballot drop boxes starting Tuesday, October 7th through Election Day, November 4th. You can visit sdvote.com for a list of locations and hours. If you want to vote in person, take advantage of early voting. Starting Saturday, October 25th, you can select vote centers located around the county that will be open daily from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Starting on November 1st, all vote centers will be open from 8 to 5 p.m. And on the final day of voting, November 4th, all vote centers, official ballot drop boxes, and the registrar's office will be open from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. You can learn more about voting in the November special election at sdvote.com or call toll-free at 800-696-0136.
This is East County Magazine's People Power, profiling local people making a positive difference in our community and our world.
This is Miriam Raftery with a People Power report. A surprise thunderstorm that hit San Diego County on August 25th drenched hay at Horses of Tiernanog, a nonprofit animal rescue group in rural Descanso. The storm lasted more than 2 hours and dropped close to 2 inches of rain, according to local rain gauges. Horses of Tiernanog founder Amy Pat Rigney says the ranch needs to order extra hay due to mold-damaged bales at a cost of about $5,000. She says, since our annual budget is based on 12 hay deliveries each year, this damage poses a real concern for us, especially during challenging times. So the group is seeking support to help replace the hay. On Saturday, September 20th at 5:30 p.m., Horses of Tiernanog will host a fundraising event at the King's Inn in Mission Valley. The evening will include a fiesta buffet, a horse-themed opportunity drawing, and a presentation featuring ranch residents. For tickets or more information, you can visit horsesoftiernanog.org. That's spelled Horses of Tiernanog, TIRNANOG.org.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewell, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.